Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Chicago Tribune has been doing a series that I didn't exactly think was a good idea. That's probably a good idea. 100 greatest Bears players ever, because the Bears are the ones that are putting out the list. At least that's the way I understand it. This isn't the, you know, fans voting. It's the organization. Imagine if WGN Radio said, here's the greatest WGN Radio news, sports, traffic, weather, producer, announcers of all time. We have a Hall of Fame, and some of us get in there, but we didn't say Bob Collins is the best or Steve Bertrand is the best. But the Bears are doing that.
Well, we didn't, but I have.
Trust me, we all have those feelings. So Nagurski they have at number three today, and Gale Sayers at number four. I want to talk about Gale Sayers. Where's Walter Payton? Walter Payton is probably going to be number one or two, would you say? Who are the remaining two?
Yeah, it'll be one.
Who's missing here?
So this
Butkus is not on here yet, so it's going to come down to those two.
So the Bears did their own list, and this is the Chicago Tribune doing a separate one.
So the Bears
have Walter Payton, Dick Butkus, Bronco Nagurski, Sid Luckman, and Gale Sayers rounding out the top five.
Okay. Well, I guess that point is still made. I'm not sure if it's interesting to me that the organization would do that, but this is the Tribune's list, huh? And it's very similar because they've got Nagurski 3, Sayers 4, Luckman 5, Bill George, etc. Missing from 1 and 2 would be Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus.
Well, it'll be Walter Payton 1 and Dick Butkus 2.
Pardon me, yeah. I'm looking at Gale Sayers at 4, but Bronco Nagurski 3, and then Walter Payton and Butkus. By the way, the story about Nagurski is funny in here. I guess he played at the University of Minnesota. Here's what they write. One day, Clarence Doc Spears, the football coach at the University of Minnesota, was on a summer recruiting trip 300 miles north of his Minneapolis campus. As he drove along country roads, he stopped to ask a farm boy for directions. Bronco Nagurski, pushing a plow without a horse, showed Spears where he needed to go. He did so by picking up his equipment with his right hand and using it as a pointer. Bronk does not tell the story himself, George Hallis wrote, but he doesn't deny it either. Spears forgot about the boy he was in town to see, and Nagurski was on his way to football stardom. They say when he hit you, he changed your life. Even at the ankles, it felt like an electric shock. Bronco Nagurski, number three. How did the statue look? How did the statues look today?
I thought they were great. Yeah, I really do. I think they're perfectly positioned. It's those steps leading up to Gate Zero, which is the south entrance of Soldier Field. And it's normally a large gathering spot before games. I think a lot of people kind of meet up there and take pictures and all those sorts of things. I can tell you that's probably going to be one of the most during the season. I mean, you'll see Instagramming and all that sort of thing. But I thought they did a great job. And we were talking to George McCaskey after, and he said, well, I was just kind of getting a good read on it from Jared Payton because he's been really into the whole thing, and Jared absolutely loved it. It was cool to see their whole family there taking pictures together and whatnot.
It's a funny thing because, like, the Michael Jordan statue is awesome.
Yeah.
The Harry Carey one is not good. I don't think the Jack Brickhouse one does him justice. And the Harry Carey one's kind of creepy. The Jordan one is great. The Ernie Banks one is really good.
The Makita and Hall ones, I think, are great.
I know it, but it's a funny thing when you cast somebody, what will the shape or image be? Will you put the fans in the background, which haunts the Harry Carey one? So it's just kind of a weird sort of thing to get that right. I'm glad to hear you think they did a good job of it.
I think they did a very good job. And Jared Payton and Connie Payton, the whole family, was involved with the process. They met with the artist, and they actually went down to, I believe he was in Pennsylvania, but they had flown down a couple times to meet with him because he had clay moldings and things like that before he actually started the process of building these bronze thousands and thousands of pounds structures. So Jared and the family were very much involved with it.
Dave Ennett's our sports director. Dave, do you agree with me that statues can be funny things? They can perfectly remind you of who that person was, and sometimes they can kind of throw you off a little bit.
Yeah, totally agree, John. But I think most of the statues around town, I think, have been done very well. You go out in the bleachers at Guaranteed Rate Field, and they have some of the statues out there. I think back to the dedication of the Ron Santo statue at Wrigley Field that I just happened to see it the other day, and it's still that I think really captured Ronnie. Yeah. But I agree with Kevin. I did not see these in person today, but I saw the television coverage on WGN TV, and I've seen some other images of the statues, and I think these really did kind of capture the essence of both George Halas and Walter Payton.
Yeah, I think the Halas one was fairly easy to predict what he would be doing. You know, it looks like he's coaching on the sideline. Where Walter Payton, you got a whole lot of options there. What sort of position do you have him in, running the ball?
What do they have him in? What is he doing?
It's his signature move, Dave. You can probably explain it better than I, where he would sort of do that kind of half-step, kind of set up a defender. But I think if you go back and look at his highlights, you'll see plenty of times where he does this move where he's got the ball, he's holding it like a grapefruit, as somebody explained, his one-handed holding of the football, and him kind of doing this half kick step thing that he would utilize to set up defenders.
Which, by the way he held the ball was something that people were always trying to get him to change, and of course he didn't need to change it, and he didn't want to change it, and didn't really have a problem either hanging on to the football, as we found out, because the guy had so much strength.
Probably the only guy that could get away with carrying a football that. Because you play football at an early age and your coach saw you doing that, you were running laps or doing push-ups or something.
All right, Dave Ennett, Walter Payton story, go.
Walter Payton story, go. You know, the run that I think everybody remembers, I was at Soldier Field the day it happened. It was against the Kansas City Chiefs in 1977. What people forget is that the Bears won that game on a last-minute touchdown pass from Bob Avellini to Greg Latta. But what everyone remembers from the game is the run by Walter Payton. And for a guy who ran for more yards than anyone had run for in NFL history to that point, it was an 18-yard run that is sort of his signature run. And he didn't score a touchdown on it, but I think he broke four, five, six tackles, started right, had a block from Reeve Story, then came back left, and starts banging off guys in the middle of the line and just keeps his legs moving. And I think that kind of summed up what kind of a player he was. And, you know, Mike Ditka used the term today, talked about his heart, and I think that's what that run showed more than anything.
I watched that video a couple of times today. Sometimes when they say a guy broke a tackle, it's, you know, a guy leaped at him and got a hand on. These were legitimate, full-on efforts by NFL studs, and they just bounced off him. It was amazing. It was just amazing.
It's remarkable, and I was thinking about this and watching Jarrett this morning, and to think that for a stretch there in the middle 80s, Chicago boasted two guys, Walter Payton and Michael Jordan. I mean, the preeminent figures, really. I don't know if league-wide people thought of Walter Payton the way we did in Chicago, because there were so many great stars in the NFL in that era. But I think today, I think people appreciate what he meant to the league. But think about that those two guys were playing in this town at the same time.
How lucky were we? When I think about Walter Payton, the thing that first comes to mind is after a crushing hit that he'd deliver to somebody who was hitting him looked like just as hard. And you think these guys are never getting up. And Payton would pop up. He did a back handspring one time after a thing that you thought would have been a season ender. And he does a back handspring to get up after the thing. And I'm like, how is that humanly possible?
Well, we were talking earlier, John. Obviously, I didn't have a chance to see him play live, but I've watched just about every highlight you can possibly find on YouTube and the internet. And the thing that always stuck out to me as a kid when I would see these highlights, how it was just so unbelievable to see a running back just completely jumping over the offensive line. Yeah. He would just jump over the entire line and into the end zone. And since that, I've never seen a running back do it once, let alone the amount of times he did throughout his career. It's unbelievable to see him do that.
You know, there was that play that for years when CBS on the old NFL Today, it was the play they showed at the beginning of the show every week. It was great shot by NFL Films, and it's that play, Kev, where he goes airborne and literally flies into the end zone. I mean, really,
it's wild.
Was something you just don't see.
And nobody's been able to replicate that. Yeah.
My mom called those flyovers whenever the Bears would have it inside the 20. Literally, she goes, just give it to Walter and have him do a flyover. And if he flies over everybody, then it'll be a good thing.
He can't get him.
Mom was right. Mom, you're still right. If we don't have anybody that does flyovers anymore. All right, I got to take a break. Dave, thank you. You got to get up in about, you going to bed now? Is that how it works at the end of the house?
No, are you kidding? I'm just sitting down for dinner, and then I'll read the paper, and then I'll go to bed.
Then he goes to bed. Thank you, Mr. Ennett.
See you guys.
WGN Radio Sports Director Dave Ennett. You'll hear him tomorrow morning with Steve Cochran and company. I'm going to pause here.
And he did have it correct, by the way. Great memory from Dave Ennett. Bob Evelina to Greg Ladd, a 37-yard touchdown pass in that Chiefs-Bears game. Looked it up.
You think that they would have just... If I were the Chiefs, I would just go, you know what? You guys go ahead.
After the Walter run?
After that,
throw the towel.
We're just going to go now.
Forget it.
Clearly, we can't tackle you. And he didn't even have to do a flyover. Steve, Kevin, and then some calls. Walter Payton, remembery, story. What?
So I started my work with the Bears in 88, and he retired, I think, in 87. But he was still around in 88 in the locker room often, and I would do the post-game interviews with back then with Dick Butkus. And so we're live from, you know, you just stand in the locker room with a microphone, and Walter would, it happened two or three times, I'd be talking, doing an interview, and some guy would grab my rear end, goose me, and it was always Walter Payton. That's my connection.
How nice. How special. What a nice moment.
It was
for the
fun.
Two of you.
Are you kidding me? It was a great story.
It was a locker room. Yeah. It's perfect. And I hear it. I guess that was his thing. He was a prankster.
He was a prankster.
My dad managed an electronics store in the northwest suburbs, and Walter Payton used to come early. As my dad was kind of getting the store ready to open it, my dad would open up the door for him a few minutes early and let Walter do some shopping and grab some things. And my dad has told me this story multiple times where he would always mess with my dad, where he would ask for the box on top of the top rack.
Right.
And my dad would get the ladder out, and he'd go and he'd pull it down, and he'd be sweating, and Walter would just look at the box. Nah, I don't like that one. Give me that one. And it was all good fun. He was just messing with my dad. But
the other thing is when I was the one who made the delivered the news on this radio station when he died, and it was a different time. We found out by fax. I would go check the fax machine, and I checked the fax and saw one coming in from the Chicago Bears, and it was the announcement that Walter Payton had died.
How about that? It's funny because the texts, or you can text, and you can also go on my Facebook page. On my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John. We posted one of those highlight reels, and then you all are recollecting your favorite Walter Payton memory. Amanda Beal said, I remember dancing to the Super Bowl Shuffle when I was 8 years old on VHS. Walter was my favorite on that video, and his little hip move that he did. Connie said there was a special on TV that showed how he worked out climbing hills. I also love watching him live in the game. We were lucky enough to sit at the 45-yard line each time. You know, I felt that way when Michael Jordan was playing, too. I remember somebody wrote a column, and they said, if you have the luxury of having good seats to a Walter Payton or a Michael Jordan game, you should give them to somebody else the same way people who had Babe Ruth tickets should have shared them with people so you could say, I saw the person that nobody will ever get to see the likes of again. John, I was on a plane coming from St. Louis to Chicago when he broke the rushing record. The pilot announced it over the PA and the whole plane cheered. And the town was really wrapped up in that. I don't remember what year that was. Ed, you're on WGN Radio. Jump in there. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Hey, buddy, you're on the radio. What's up?
Oh, nothing much. How you doing?
What's your Walter Payton memory?
Okay. I believe it was his rookie year that he was at McCormick Place when they had the car show. And he was not selling so much as he was there to represent a certain automobile. And we had the opportunity to speak with him, get his autograph. My daughter got to kiss him. And he was such a very nice man and one hell of a football player.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I mean, it's just a game, right? It's just a football game. Who cares? But Ditka had it right today. It was his heart. I mean, if an accountant was that, you know, you'd like to think that it wasn't just that he was entertaining us, but that he was doing so with all of his might, with all of his energy, with all of his commitment, and with a joy, too. Yeah, thanks for the phone call. Debbie said, John, I was at Jarrett's, that's of course his son's high school graduation, when he went up to get his diploma, Walter popped out on stage to give him a hug. He was so thin, and I thought to myself, he doesn't have much time left. So sad, but it was so nice to see him see his son graduate. I don't know that's, I didn't know that he did that. John, watch Hearts in Atlantis, based on, really, if you want to feel really good about Bronco Nagurski. The Tribune wrote about him today. On Facebook, I'm WGN King John. The video's there of some of his greatest moments. Do you guys remember the scene, too? The scene, the play, where I think it was when he was doing one of his flyovers, and he landed, like, on his neck, like he was perpendicular to the ground, just on his head. Just landed on his neck.
Right on top of it.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, popped up, walked back to the huddle. I like when he scored a touchdown, too. I'll sound real old here, but he didn't have an end zone dance, did he? He might have spiked the ball, but a lot of times he just flipped it back to the ref.
He gave it to the offensive lineman.
That's right. Yeah.